Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Human Reaction Podcast. My name is David Rand. I am solo tonight. We are having some technical difficulties, so we can't have the whole crew together. But I'm so excited to talk this week about the major drama that happened, the kind of behind-the-scenes shadow wars that are going on between the Trump administration, his allies in the Congress, and in the media sector, and Congressman Thomas Massie. You really got to stick around. Check this out. It's going to be awesome. Let's go. Let's take a moment and really think about the moment we're in. If it weren't for Thomas Massie, some women Republicans, and Ro Khanna with the Democrats, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't have... Well, one, that one British Lord guy in the Prince of Darkness in the UK, he would still be doing his thing, right? He would be just running around. As well as Lexi Westner, would never actually know whether or not he was charged or like set to be charged or a person of interest or a collaborator with Jeffrey Epstein to the point where we would have actual charges for him. We would have suspicions, but not the degree of confidence we do. So we have this gain that I'm noticing in the moment that a lot of people aren't appreciating because we haven't got to what people really want, which is an understandable objection. I'm not beefing too hard with that. But I think we need to appreciate the courage it takes to be the lead on that. As much as Marjorie Taylor Greene took the arrows that she took and she's out now, you don't see the same thing happen to Lauren Boebert or Nancy Mace, the other Republicans that supported this. But Thomas has really been in the lead here. And I really want to talk about what happened this week with him, in part because I think it gives you a look at what goes on behind the scenes. And because of my background, I've got to kind of be around this a little bit and how some of this works around Congress and around elections and around this sort of phenomena in our political sphere. And I want to explain it to you so that you can understand. Because if you don't see this point of view, if you've never been here, it's difficult to see how these things interact. From the outside, it looks spontaneous. It looks like just things people are saying because that's what they believe. But I suggest that there's actually a hand here. And I don't think I'm like the last person to be a single cause explainer of things. My intuition is usually that things kind of arrive by people and manifest due to people's individuals' will and individuals' needs and incentives and things like that. Very rarely is it just a single explanation, but I think this is one of those cases where that's not true, where there's probably a central cause simply because of the pattern of events and how they play out. But let's just take a moment and just appreciate the generational run he is on right now. I mean, he set himself up to be really what every Republican says they are going to be when they're running their election campaign. He's going to be principled. He's going to follow the Constitution. He's going to limit the government. He's going to hold people accountable regardless of who they are. He's going to work with the other side in order to get the best things done that he can for his Constitution, for the Constitution, for his political philosophy, for his constituents. And when you think about why that him becoming that might create the response that we see, I think that gives some texture to the moment with how people are reacting from the congressional side, much less the media side, where I think that kind of bleeds into it a little bit. So you see how that's how they might feel about him. Like he's like they're the mirror of what they say they are and how that might regenerate this kind of frustration with him. So what do you do if you're in that position? If you're the establishment Republican trying to get the Trump agenda across and you think the Jeffrey Epstein thing is all a big distraction that's just going to prevent you from really getting the good work done that you otherwise could do, then you are, you know, you're going to want to do something about it. If you're trying to prevent that from happening and you're really focused on funding the government and getting the marginal wins that you can and making sure your friends are funded and your enemies are punished and all the things that happen in DC, really the DC approach to thinking about our politics and how it should be done. How do you hold him accountable to him leaving the herd and doing this sort of thing? How do you attack him, right? Because he's in this position, this unique position where he's actually the one closer to what the Trump and MAGA coalition promised to be. in so many ways in this moment. That's kind of who he's becoming. I'm not saying that's who he is. I'm saying that's how he looks. And I'm would suggest that that's who he is. But I do think that at minimum, that's how he looks, right? So it didn't really work when they went directly for him, right? And I think the good example of that is what happened this week with Pam Bondi early in the week.
Who's responsible? Are you able to track who in your organization made this massive failure and released the victims' names? Are you able to track who it was that obscured Les Wexner's name as a co-conspirator in an FBI document? Do you have that kind of accountability?
I believe Wexner's name was listed more than 4,000 times.
I already told you that.
Can I finish my answer? Come on, let me finish my answer. We corrected that within 40 minutes. He was already, you're acting like everybody's trying to cover up Wexner's name.
Reclaiming my time.
I'm going to answer this question.
Reclaiming my time.
Mr. Chairman. This is how this works.
Can I have my time?
Mr. Chairman.
The gentlelady can give her answer. The time belongs to the gentleman from Kentucky.
All right, I'm reclaiming my time.
Can I give my answer?
So, yes. I'm going to put the language of the bill up on the screen.
Chairman, may I give another my question. Answer on that? It's a political joke, and I need to give my answer on that.
We'll let the Attorney General respond, and then the gentleman can move to
Chairman,
his next question.
It's my time.
Within 40 minutes, Wexner's name was added back.
Within 40 minutes of me catching you red-handed.
There was one redaction out
where
of
he's
over
listed
40,
as a co-conspirator. Okay.
And we invited you in.
Gentlemen.
This guy has Trump derangement syndrome. He needs to get, you're a failed politician.
I want you to watch the video.
I don't know why it suddenly clicked to that. That was a weird clip. But she then goes on later in this whole Trump derangement syndrome thing. And, you know, I really felt that moment of when I caught you red-handed was the moment. I don't think her saying he's got Trump derangement, that really played that well for the general public. And overall, I feel like that Massey won that exchange. Correct me if I'm wrong. Put it in the comments. Let me know why I'm full of it. But it seems like to me, even just from a neutral observer's point of view, trying to take myself out of my body and think about the average person coming across that on the internet or seeing that on the news, would say that, oh man, caught you red-handed. You know, I mean, her defensiveness there is typically the losing play. And note that she then goes on to say, well, where were you during the last administration? And this is keeps on being brought up. And I just don't know why I have this compulsion to bring it up, but many people were concerned about the Epstein files throughout the Biden administration. I don't know how you remember 2000, 2004, but that's how I remember it. I mean, since his death, Epstein didn't kill himself was a very common refrain all across the internet, especially amongst this kind of people that Massey makes up of the most radical right, you know, to libertarian type Republicans. And then, of course, like here's the documentation of February 10th, 2024. He said he demands the release of the Epstein client list. I mean, this is in the context of talking about Section 702 and warrantless wiretapping and other sorts of shady government actions. But he was absolutely, of course, not afraid of that. I mean, I don't think anyone who looks at this seriously really thinks that's true of him. Except that there's a certain class of media influencer and media personality right now that wants us to believe that's who Massey is, that he's like Ro Khanna or these Democrats who suddenly found Epstein. Now that looks like it might make Trump look bad. That's not who Thomas Massey is. In fact, he worked closely with Trump and endorsed him and was endorsed by Trump and did all these other things. Like, what story are you telling? How are you at all interacting with this with any amount of integrity? If that's your take, if you're kind of lumping him in with that crowd, you've really lost the picture, the moment. Everything about the moment has just kind of been distilled into like this partisan nonsense that doesn't make any sense. So but that didn't work, right? Like that exchange, when you watched that, it didn't really work for you to be like, oh, Thomas Massey, you're really a grandstander. And it didn't seem to me to be, you know, the win for, you know, that claim. So how do you get at it at that point? What do you do to undermine his credibility so that he can no longer embarrass you? Well, this week, this interesting thing happened. And here's a tweet that I put out. Follow me, you know, David_Rand_ on X if you want to catch my takes. But this moment was interesting. So like the Blaze puts out this tweet. And I'll go down here. I screenshotted it for a posterity. That's a word. Thomas Massey is the only Republican to vote against advancing the SAVE Act on the House floor. And this is how you actually do it. This is how you attack Thomas Massie. You attack him by saying that he's a hypocrite, that he is not what he likes makes himself out to be, that his vote, in this case, if you didn't know anything, you'd look at this and be like, whoa, what happened? How is this so tight? There's a couple no votes, right? Not a no presence, but NV, people who are missing functionally. And they barely got this across. He almost voted against, if you missed that, it says HRES 1057 there, that he voted, and you just looked at the tweet, you would say, oh my God, Thomas Massie is what they say he is. He's actually just a Democrat. That's what the Blaze put out. Now, the Blaze is it's alternative media, but it's somewhat of a, I would say, an important part of the media sphere of the right. You know, Glenn Beck was a very popular radio host, very popular TV host and commentator. And then he went on to found the Blaze Online and one of the first movers really into the digital space on scale and with video for the right. So for a large part of older folks, but still a lot of folks, it's an influential publication. And they come out and they put this tweet out. And I immediately look at that and be like, that can't be right. That's not right, because I remember 2 seconds ago about Thomas Massie saying this. And of course, everything in this tweet, of course, later they delete it. That's why that's there now. But everything in this, when you see this, is wrong. Not a part of this is correct in any sense of those. And I'm going to lay out the case. If you say that and you're like, Dave, the Blaze might have got something wrong, but it would be a detail. It wouldn't be the whole thing. No, guys. It's the whole thing. It's the whole enchilada. There's nothing right about this. And let me try to unpack that. Okay. So what was it that he voted on? He later explains this. And this kind of happened. There's like a couple hour lag here. But it's really this section that he looks to here in section 25. And then it's, you know, very technical language. Let me just explain what this language means that's highlighted. So normally there's a special rule from the Rules Committee. When a special rule comes out from the Rules Committee, it has a 24-hour period of time for you to consider the new rules. In this, and this is something we always remind people on the podcast, but it's sometimes difficult to retain. Even being the amount of time that I've spent away from working on the Hill, will forget this, that you often pass a procedural rule and then you'll pass a bill or a set of bills together under that new procedural rule. That procedural rule says this is how much time we're going to debate things, how many amendments, who can offer amendments, blah, 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 blah. And it sets the stage for then voting on the bills. So what this bill does is it says new rules for this period of time, in the new procedure that we're going to do, you usually have 24 hours to evaluate a new rule before you vote on it, right? And it's going to say for certain kinds of bills over this period of time, any procedural vote is waived, the requirement for the 24-hour rule from that committee, specifically for continuing resolutions. These are government spending bills. These are continuing resolutions or government spending bills that say last year's spending, we're going to continue with some modifications, right? So it's not a budget bill. We don't do those anymore. We haven't done it since the release of the iPad. Check my facts on that. It's crazy. And then it just says through mid-February 2025. So the next couple of weeks here, we're not going to, any CRs brought up, they don't have to, any procedure for CRs don't have to follow the normal rules. And what this allows you to do is to quickly move something out of Rules Committee to the floor to vote and then into your CR, right? And what that means is you now no longer have the time to read the CR before you vote on it. That's what it means. And that's why I voted against it. What this CR will mean is that we will now lock in, again, Biden-level spending, right? And that's just what the Republicans are just giving them, just kind of resign themselves for some of them and are very excited about for other ones to do, right? I imagine many Republicans or many good Republicans who are just like, well, this is what leadership wants and Trump wants, and they just don't want a budget fight right now. And we got other priorities. And we got other things we're doing. We're not working on the budget right now. The priority is deregulation or it's tariffs or whatever. We got a war in the Middle East to do, guys. So we can't be fighting about the budget right now. This moment is the setup to another spending scam. Think about that. And out of everybody who voted, all the Republicans said, you know, this spending scam thing, I'm not going to stand on that hill right now. But one guy did. And in that moment, a bunch of people like The Blaze came out and said this: Thomas Massie is the only Republican to vote against advancing the SAVE Act on the House floor. So, a little background. Do you guys remember when Nancy Pelosi said, you got to pass the bill to find out what's in it? Do you remember that? You remember that, Barack Obama accuses Mitt Romney of talking about funding of a healthcare plan that wasn't actually released and then saying, well, we're going to pass the bill and then find out what's in it? Throughout the Tea Party era, I was at 50, 60, maybe 80, maybe 100 Tea Party meetings across a couple years there, where voting on bills that we don't read was one of the things that we were really upset about. That's what I remember from that time. And I imagine that's what you remember from that time, if you were involved too. But for those who are new or younger, that's what we were worried about. It was a crazy time, man. Like, we were so jazzed on spending and taxes and regulations for a minute there. The Republicans. And they made a lot of promises. And one of those promises articulated itself in a 2011 rule that basically said, you got 72 hours for certain kinds of legislation, and then rules take 24 hours. And those kind of, advances were supposedly our wins that we advanced, that were conservative Republicans were concerned about and then put into wins. Those wins weren't widely celebrated because they largely go unknown because it's mostly procedural, but they were wins. They were something, right? It's the same thing with, and just to divert just a little bit here, it's the same thing with like earmarks. Earmarks were banned and now they brought back earmarks. Yeah, I don't know if you know that, but they did. They brought back earmarks. They're all over the place now. That's why we can't. That's why spending has gotten worse and everything else, because we banned earmarks. And then a certain set of Republicans would be like, but we can't get things done now. And then other Republicans would be like, yeah, I guess I can't get things done now because I can't just fund it with tacking it onto spending bills. And like, oh, God, well, I guess we got to bring those back. And now they are back. So, and it isn't just this tweet, right? I'm not just beefing on a tweet. It gets way bigger than this. It's still on the Blaze website, right? They wrote an article. Saw this article soon after I saw the tweet. It was an interesting moment because you got this guy, lone Republican defies Trump, votes to tank the SAVE Act. Now, now already, because I told you that this was really about the procedure. So this propaganda isn't working on you. But if you just saw this, if you're just a regular Blaze viewer, you'd be like, oh, Thomas Massie, man, I knew that he just works with the public. He just doesn't want to, he just has a vendetta against Trump, right? He's just irrational. He's got TDS, right? You read that little headline and then you go, oh, fuck that guy. And you go on, right? And you get into the article and the article does have some honesty to it. It does mention that it is a procedure vote. I give the author that. The vote was not on the SAVE Act itself. In the House, lawmakers must first adopt a rule that sets the term for a date, including how long members may speak and whether amendments are allowed, before a bill can receive final consideration. If the rule fails, the legislation cannot move forward. Those are all true things, but not truthful things. Right? Those lack all the relevant context that you need to know about the power of this bill. Let me give you some clarity here. If you vote on a procedural rule and that procedural rule fails, you don't move forward. That's true. But if you vote on that again the next day and it's different and it gets the votes, it succeeds. And then you move the legislation forward. That's how it works. In fact, it works so much like that. And so often, in order to set up for a CR, they literally vote on procedural rules dozens of times within days. I'm not kidding you. This is not uncommon to have a compromise, have a discussion, a battle, if you will, of a political legislative battle about what are the rules of debate before we have the debate. Also note, he doesn't mention the 24-hour rule here. He doesn't mention that this will mean that the CR will be able to be voted on without sufficient discussion or awareness, because it's going to be able to move quickly and get to the floor without the 24 hours to the rule for the CR and then the CR. So obviously that's the setup. And Thomas Massie saw through the setup. And then rather than getting a reasonable quote, so he does eventually put this in, right? So if you read it now, you would be like, oh, well, look, he did his job. He actually talked to Massie, or at least he mentioned his ex post. But this was added afterwards. This article was edited in publication to add his statements about the rule vote. without providing the relevant context about why he voted this way. And that's the 24-hour rule. And that's that we made a promise as conservative Republicans that we thought that congressmen reading the bills was a good thing. That's what we thought we were signing up for as conservative Republicans. But now that we are in the moment we're in, nothing else matters than whatever leadership says. And that is, well, one, makes us all slaves, makes all the Republicans slaves of leadership. And that's not right. We're citizens in this country. This is a republic, right, where legislators discuss and debate and then come up with things. So him doing this outside the partisan boundary is, you know, what the republic is built on. And then to use this, you know, obvious media manipulation tactic of, you know, lone Republican defies Trump to save act, and then quoting a guy, his core source for this information is Greg Price off of X. I mean, come on, guys. We could do better than this. So we got this author, Landon Plyfe, and I looked at his stuff. You know, I wasn't familiar with him. He's a young guy, so I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he just didn't know. He didn't know how this game works, but this is how the game works, Landon. It doesn't work where, you know, like they only vote on. In fact, this one, if you read the rule, is actually for like four different bills. Right. And then it sets the stage for the rule for the CR, which is probably what we're going to see. Mark my words. Tell me if I'm wrong. Otherwise, what was that rule for? I mean, think about it. I mean, he's fairly fresh. You check out his X account, you know, made in January of 2026. He's a brand new reporter. He looks like he's fresh out of college. So, and mainly his beat is not Congress, too. I mean, it's pro-ICE and pro-administration of talking points that are, you know, fairly narrow set of things, immigration and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, grain of salt. But the editor, come on, Blaze editor, whoever you are. I mean, come on. It looks like, who's the editor over there? Mark Levin? What is happening? Right, where this is the standard? Come on, we can do better than this. And of course, you know, others still have this up. Right. Here's the guy's profile. And here's this is his source, Greg Price, some Yahoo with a lot of followers. I have no idea who this guy is beyond that he has 500,000 followers on X. That is not a qualification, ladies and gentlemen. All four ladies who watch this podcast, they're all in the Discord, though. So jump in the Discord if you want to meet them. Yeah, I mean, you're just shocking. I mean, this community vote. No, I don't know if it's live yet though. But and of course, you got a lot of Massey fans in the comments. But it was it's ridiculous. This quote is still up. Many people, including like Clandestine and others, have gotten rid of it, and it's really quite absurd that he would continue to keep it up, given the amount of misinformation about it. Just the shamelessness of it is shocking. But he's also not alone. Quite a few other people still have almost exactly this one up. AF Post has it up. They had no context at all for that. This was a process, a procedural vote. No qualification. This guy, I mean, like the snarkiness and arrogance of tweets like this is shocking. Hey, all you apologists for Thomas Grandstand Massey. He voted against bringing the SAVE Act to the House floor for a vote. Only Republican to do so. Tell me again about my principles. Once again, if it had failed, random internet person with almost over a quarter million followers, they would just brought another rules vote and maybe taking this out so they could get his vote. This is what principles look like, in fact, is making these votes, because it wasn't on the SAVE Act, you nincompoop. All right, so the next one, a Venezuelan guy, it is Jesus, so, you know, grain of salt, but Massey was the only Republican to vote against the SAVE Act. Is this dude retarded or just being paid to act like one? I mean, you don't have to know anything, right? Like, that's really the nature of it. This one makes me the most mad because the name. The Calvin Coolidge Project. If anyone would have been mad about a short vote for procedure, it would have been Calvin Coolidge. Absolutely. And once again, content, no context, no actual like insight, no value really added here other than a cheap political hit. And of course, he's got, you know, 117,000 followers. This got, you know, 700,000 views. I mean, just pure propaganda and, you know, random chick represent, you know, person, but 360,000 followers. Come on, guys. Come on. This is pathetic. I mean, we need a better class of conservative influencer, guys. This is just awful. Another one, Ed Gallarin. I forgot I even had this one up here. 29,000, you know, moderate Massey strikes again. I mean, just absurd. Of course, he later evaluated it, but, you know, we have really just absurd degree of lack of real sophisticated understanding of what the heck is happening. I want to get into this one here from Laura Ingraham, because it gets even bigger, right? Because Laura Ingraham is, you know, she runs a fairly major, I mean, not the biggest, but a big show on Fox News. And she, you know, the Ingraham angle. And she writes from his clarification that this was a procedural vote. Nice try. Does he think we don't know basic civics? If he had killed the rule, the SAVE Act would be dead. That is again, Massey votes with Raskin and the Dems against election integrity. What's great about that is that way that sentence written was make you think that he has other votes against election integrity. She doesn't have that. That doesn't exist. That's not a thing. So she's mashing two ideas together. Again, he votes with Raskin, meaning that he voted for the Epstein files and the Dems, who were the bulk of people who voted for the Epstein files originally to actually get the petition across so that it could be voted on, because that was the real vote, right? So it's funny because she's talking about real votes, she's shockingly uninterested in the real vote of the Epstein files that were done with Massey, a handful of female Republicans, and the Dems. Why did not a single Republican agree with him? Maybe, Laura, it's because he has principles. Maybe because he's embarrassing all of you about that very thing. So if it had been voted on and failed, it would not just have gone away. This wasn't the SAVE Act vote. You can bring as many procedural votes as the speaker wants. He does it all the time. It's not something new. And I just want to remind Laura Ingraham about her own concerns about voting for bills that they haven't read.
Has painted herself into a corner. That'll be fun in the Friday Follies.
Oh God, take this part out.
But first, we begin with the monstrosity that is the omnibus bill, now signed into law, score one big one for the swamp. President Trump said he was very disappointed with the bloated $1.3 trillion spending package. He even threatened this morning, getting our hopes up, that he was going to veto it because it failed to fund the border wall. It did nothing to address DACA. Still, in the end, he signed the bill.
I say to Congress, I will never sign another bill like this again. I'm not going to do it again. Nobody read it. It's only hours old. Some people don't even know what it is. $1.3 trillion. It's the second largest ever.
So why did no one read it? Well, I realize it's like 2,232 pages long, that's all. But that's all the more reason to read the thing. Or do normal course budgeting where it's bill by bill and you can actually digest it one department at a time.
So the only Republican to actually stand up and do something about the CR process and the guy who voted against the way that you lay the foundation for that CR process is the one that you are spending this time to attack politically about an issue not even related to that right now. That's what's happening. That's our moment. That is your political commentariat, America. Conservatives, Republicans, people like me. What's happening right now? Where are we? What is this alternative reality I've suddenly wound myself in, where we don't care about whether or not there's time to read the bill anymore or understand the rule or lobby to get the votes to stop the rule if the rule is wrong? That's what he voted against. And I'm absolutely shocked. I take it back. I'm not shocked. This moment is so crazy that it's not shocking. And we are stuck with these, you know, wild speculations about the true motives, rather than taking him at his word, we have Laura Ingraham here with his true motives about why he would vote this way. It's as simple as this. Massey hates Trump. He has no other agenda. His version of the Constitution means open borders, jobs being shipped overseas, and lower living standards for working people in America. Now he wants to help Hakeem Jeffries become Speaker. No thanks. You know, we used to do Constitution classes, right? That's what the Tea Party did. Yeah, just imagine it, you know, just 20-year-old David with a bunch of 50 and 40-year-olds reading about the Constitution together. And I do remember a part of the Constitution about taxation. How about that was supposed to come from the Congress. And I do remember this thing about emergency powers and fears around those emergency powers, and that those were principles. Those were things that applied regardless of who was in power. That's what we were concerned about back then. And I imagine Laura remembers that too. I mean, I don't think she showed up to the Constitution classes. I seriously doubt that. But I imagine what she did do is, do whatever it takes to have access to power. And that's really what's happening now. All these influencers, it's so that they can get access to power. All these media people, it's so that they can get access to power. It's not about persuasion. It's not about saying what you think is true. It's not about, because if it was about truth, you would be like, oh my God, I made a terrible mistake. And I thought this bill, this is the one and only chance to vote for the SAVE Act. I thought this was the SAVE Act. I thought procedural rules worked differently. My bad. I didn't find one of those. I looked, not a one from the ones that I tracked. I wish I would have saved more screenshots, but I got a job, so. So if you can't attack him directly, you have to attack him with hyperbole. If you can't attack him, on his principles or on his logic, you have to attack him by insinuation, like Laura Ingraham's tweet about it really just being a beef about between him and Trump. Rather than the personality Trump about, getting back to the question is, what the hell does it mean to be a Republican? What the hell does it mean to be a conservative? And to be clear, I'm not even saying this as I'm not a bulwark guy. I'm not a neocon who left Trump in 2015 and 16 and hated him all along. No, man, I'm from the very beginning. I'm like, I really want you to be what you're telling me you are. Just be that, please, God. All I want, you great job on the border. Good job. Good job on the tax cuts. But what about the spending? Because that kind of matters for us plebs who are dealing with the inflation. I want to get to the common cause. So I mentioned at the beginning that these kind of can appear, if you're just looking at them from the outside, like they're all just independent people, but it's too, the threads are too tight. They're braided too tightly to be a bunch of people who saw a vote on House Resolution 1057 and thought, well, that's a SAVE Act. I better freaking tweet about it. No. Come on. I'm not born yesterday. What happened, I suspect. This is just guessing. Need more information, and I'm never going to get that information. But I'm going to just guess. And I think this time you could take it to the bank for what it's worth. And that's that Speaker Johnson or someone in the White House saw this vote and thought, people are too dumb to know the difference between a procedural rule and the actual vote for the SAVE Act. So if we put out that this is for the SAVE Act, even though it's for like five bills, and even though one of them is for the CR, and we'll actually make it so that it's not possible to really vet the CR before we vote on it, then we can really push back on Massey. We can really make him own it. So they took a screenshot, sent it off to a bunch of influencers, maybe a listserv, something like that. And then all these things come out. And then all these people, in order to get more clout in the moment, they decided to take a man standing on principle for the very principle that we spent so much time and effort trying to fight for, reasonable rules in Congress to know what the hell they're voting on, to be able to lobby votes potentially against leadership, because leadership isn't always right. God damn it. I've seen too many speakers come and go to say that. And use it to attack that guy. And what was the real cause to want to do that is because he's having some fidelity to the question of whether or not permanent emergency powers are a healthy constitutional issue, whether or not Congress should be the place where new taxes come from, because tariffs are taxes. Even if you support tariffs, you can't deny that, guys. Come on. Let's be honest. Yeah, they're taxes. Let's not be postmodernist about this. So if they had failed, they could have just done this otherwise. And rather than, you know, just letting it be the way it is, you gotta embarrass him. You gotta make this about hurting the president or stopping the SAVE Act rather than the vote of what it was. And honestly, that's just dishonest. And can we have a movement based on dishonesty? Is anything worth the end result of the agenda? And I get it. There are times where I find myself getting there too emotionally a little bit, where like it seems like anything, any means really could justify because I'm so afraid. But I don't know if that's really the right way to run a movement. And I think ideas are more important. Our integrity is more important at the end of the day. So something for you to take away with it. The administration and its influencer class, this new thing that we have of influencer class, and the media personalities like Laura Ingraham, they were more interested in, you know, at the end of the day, like functionally, what they were doing is they were more interested in punishing him for the Epstein files, for disobeying Trump on the Epstein files and not doing his will. And more interesting, laying the foundation for another CR than they were in actually passing the SAVE Act, right? Because the SAVE Act was just a mechanism for them, right? It was just a tool. It was just the knife they could use to just poke this guy. Not asking whether it was true, whether or not there was fidelity to their viewers or their followers. Just asking, oh, this is the moment where we can really get this guy. Because ultimately, do we mean anything? Do we stand for anything? If when Republicans are power or out of power, it's, well, we have to read the bills before we vote on them. Something every American supports, right? And then when we're in power, it's pass them to find out what's in them. Then do we stand for anything at all? The only way to make principles mean something is if they mean stuff when you're in power, when you have the opportunity to actually do something about it. And now that we're in power, it's like every time we try to do something in line with our principles, there's some wing of our group that's like, it's not enough, right? Because it doesn't go perfectly. And that's not what legislative process is like. I've been involved in a lot of legislatures, and every one of them is messy, and it has its factions, and it has its fighting. And it's not perfect, and it's marginal, and you get the wins you can when you can. And you might even say, like, David, you're not being practical enough. And I could see that too. I'm somewhat being doggedly committed to this idea of reading bills before we vote on them. But I think that's the right place to be, right? And if the only way to pass a bill is so that none of Congress can read it or the public can understand it, is it worth it? I don't know. I don't know, because I think it's a short-term run for a short-term game for a long-term loss at the end of the day. And that's how this game is really played in the real world. It isn't, unless this is the Titanic, right? And this is what makes me think we might be the Titanic. This might be the moment where it's just about getting enough money through Congress right now so that the right people can get rich before the collapse. That's what this feels like a little bit. Like, nothing matters but just trying to arrange things as fast as possible before a cataclysm. And that's terrifying because, you know, I got children. So if you've been following these accounts and you've cultivated yourself really a manufactured reality, if you opened your Twitter on that day, your X account on that day, and saw those posts and walked away with that impression, you were lied to. And that is incredibly unfortunate. In a moment where information has become so decentralized and so abundant, to have people, when people put out false information, we got to hold them accountable, right? Otherwise, you're literally just asking people to lie to you and to live in a lie. And we can't have that. You don't want that for yourself. No one wants that for themselves. So, like, you could even say, Massey, it was still the wrong vote, even after you understand what happened. You know, like, that's also a reasonable standard. And you couldn't even get there if you were following these people or watching Laura Ingraham say this on X. This is a ridiculous moment for that person. And I feel sorry for you. And I hope, you know, that you can see the box you put yourself in and find a way out. Unfollow those people. That's the first step. So, all of that said, this was fun. 40 minutes in. Great time. Thank you for so much, Juan. I want to leave you with this because it was too funny not to leave with. We'll catch you guys next week. And we're just going to roll out with this amazing moment because the Pam Bondi thing on the Dow just gives me giggles. And I despite this being a bit of a rant and a freak out, I want to leave you with a smile. And leave you with something enjoyable to listen to. So, peace, guys.
How many of Epstein's co-conspirators have you indicted? How many perpetrators are you even?
The Dow right now is over 50,000. I don't know why you're laughing. That's what we should be talking about. The Dow right now. S&P at almost 7,000. The American people need to know this. Need to know how is the Dow.
Let me address the survivors because that's
how.
How many of Epstein's co-conspirators?
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.